Hey, it's Sam Alai here, founder of My Legal Academy, where we help lawyers scale and automate their law firms so they could sign up more clients and reclaim their precious time. If you're looking to grow your practice while working less, click the link in the show notes to book a free call to discover a radically different way to grow your law firm. Enjoy the episode.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 424 of The Law Entrepreneur. Once again, I'm Neil Tyra, your host on the East Coast, joined by my buddy Sam Malai out on the sunny West Coast. What's going on out there in Hollywood land?
Everything is great. Everything is good. Feeling good. Let's have a great episode today, Neil.
My daughter just flew back to Hollywood. She should be landing literally as we're speaking now.
Nice. What do you guys have planned?
She flew back. She's been here for a while. So she went back to Hollywood. She's got some shows that she's in. She's an actress. So she's got some things that she has to do through the holidays, and then she'll be back out towards the end of the year.
Very good. All right, Neil. So for today's episode, the title is What's Wrong With Your Marketing?
There's always something wrong with my marketing.
Well, it's ongoing work. So let's try to find the top issues and how to resolve these top issues. So let's
start I think you're almost burying the lead there a little bit, Sam, because I think that's exactly true. It's always an ongoing process. So I don't think we can ever stop and say, hey, I've got my marketing dialed in. I can forget about it now. I don't have to do anything more. It's working perfectly for me. It's always something that we want to be looking at.
For sure. And let me just also put it out there, just based on the time of the year we are, businesses and prospects and clients are seasonal. Seasonality is a real thing across all businesses. Q4 is supposed to be, and it is usually a slower time of the year. People are a little bit more relaxed. They're not as proactive about getting stuff done. They're not as responsive. The holidays, I think, we got the election coming up, which by the time I think will be posted, that will be still going on. So all these things do make a change. So be conscious. Don't just expect every single month that you're always going to be peaking. Understand where we are, and we try to do our best. So let's start with number one is not running ads to generate qualified leads. Neil, from what I've seen, is that there's literally 1,000 different ways to generate clients online. And when I started out this journey, I had to figure out of this 1,000, what are the couple things that I could do? And at the time when I started, it was a lot of SEO, it was a lot of content writing, it was a lot of optimization. There's some stuff with Google My Business optimization. But over time, I realized that Google Ads was the top way to generate clients. And I leaned into that world, started teaching myself it. I started becoming good friends with media buyers, Google Ads media buyers who did this for a living. And then I realized that there's a new beast in town, and that's Facebook. And then kind of Facebook became like the dominant force when it came to generating clients. And then over time, I realized, wait a minute, all of these things that I'm currently doing right now, it's all ads. I'm not doing referrals. I'm not doing SEO. I'm not optimizing my Google My Business. I'm not sponsoring my school or whatever. I'm not doing all these organic kind of stuff. Can you do those stuff? Can those be preferable? Yes. But they have issues, which is they're not scalable. They're not things that you can automate. They're not things that are trackable. They're not things that you could continue building up on. And what I found now for the last 4 or 5 years, being exposed to my own stuff and also witnessing our members who are joining our program, is you need to be running ads to be able to have a thriving, scalable law firm. That's the secret sauce. You need to be running ads. Neil, what's your take on this and how do you see it?
Yeah, I agree with you 100% there, Sam. And I think the key issue here is scalability. Because look, if you're old like me, you've done a lot of these things, including stuff as archaic as running full page ads in the Yellow Pages. For those of you who are pretty young, that was a book you used to get every year that would have the phone numbers and ads of businesses that you would call on the telephone. Nobody gets the Yellow Pages anymore. The challenge is making your marketing scalable. And look, there's only so many referrals that you can cultivate. There's only so many networking events that you can go to. There's only so many community activities that you can be a part of. Can they generate at scale the number of leads that you need to grow your firm? Not the way digital marketing can. And so if you want to scale your business, you know, in a sizable way, really digital marketing is the only way to address that need. And then the other thing that you mentioned that I think is really important is it's testable and comparable. So you can compare one platform to the other. You can compare one ad to the other. You can't do that with the other forms of marketing. You can't compare really on an organic level one referral source versus another referral source. You can do that maybe in terms of numbers, but it's not going to give you the size, the sampling size, to be able to learn what works best. And you said it best, Sam. It's not like you just figured this out intuitively. You put it to the test. You spent millions of dollars, literally, proving that this is the right conclusion. So I don't know why anybody would want to, you know, mess around and do anything else. The answer is right in front of us.
And I know some people are going to question it again, be like, oh, no, okay, you know, I have to go post some TikTok videos, some Instagram videos. Or one time, one of my videos got viral and, you know, I got good results from it. But from what I've seen is there are some people that are more extroverted or are better on camera or are better speakers who are more inclined. Those skills line better with being on camera more. But also seeing a lot of people also try to fit that mold when they're not that. And it creates some friction. It creates rifts. It creates like just lagging results where you're just trying to force too much. So you got to know yourself too. But from what I've seen in my experience, not that we have a program that helps lawyers do this, it's something that is attainable for you to learn and be able to also know how to hire the right people to do these things for you. So anybody can run ads, but not everybody can create videos and be on camera to do those organic kind of stuff. And you also, Neil, you mentioned the testable. So you're so spot on. It's so trackable to the penny. Just this morning, I was doing hardcore analyzing my campaigns and my ad sets, literally to the penny. First, I run the tests. These are basically different campaigns and different ad sets and different ads that I'm creating on these platforms. I just name them correctly based on whatever the test is. And then I let it run usually for a week to 3-4 weeks. And then on the back end, the lead and the client information goes into our CRM. And I could see who was signed up and from what campaign, ad set, and ad they came from. And then I could backtrack. Well, from this ad set, I was able to get 11 clients. From this ad set, I was able to get 4. Well, for this ad set, I spent $12,000. For this, I spent $8,000. Well, I see for this ad set, my cost per acquisition is $600 versus this one is $1,500. And once you see that with clarity, marketing becomes easy. Just cut out the low performing ad sets and low performing campaigns, continuously increasing your budget for the top performing ad sets. And you continuously do that once every week or 2 weeks. And when you do, that's when you start optimizing and you start becoming, getting that 100%, 600%, 700% ROI that successful people get to. It's that kind of trackable, results oriented optimization that gives us those amazing ROI that ad provides. Organic, you do your best, you know, you learn some things, you find the recipe that works for someone else, you do it. It's all up to the algorithm gods to, or the audience to kind of, you know, to give it the result. It's a long shot. Now, again, I think you got to know yourself, but I kind of love things that I can be able to control myself and be proactive on and get results from.
The other thing is it's granular. And you alluded to it when you said it specifically. You can track it down to the granularity of this specific ad performed at this level, as opposed to, you know, doing the survey of your clients and say, how did you hear about our firm? And their answer is Google. What do you mean? What part of Google? What ad in Google? What campaign? What ad set? You know, unless you are running these digital ads in a way that, as you suggest, you're not going to have that granularity of knowing so that you can drill down onto the most productive ROI.
Yeah, trackable and reliable and a lot more consistent than organic, and quicker results. It doesn't take months and years for you to, you know, build that profile. You'd be able to, you know what you're doing within a day. You create a campaign, Neil, it feels amazing. It's like you build something from scratch. That day you're generating leads and qualify leads. In a couple of days, clients. Proven, by the way, proven, not just one time. Let's go to point number two, really related point, which is over-relying on marketing companies. Neil, from what I've seen, is that the 80-20 principle applies to marketing companies. 80% of marketing companies don't work out, 20% does. How are you going to find that unicorn? Well, you better know somebody who knows somebody already using a really good marketing company and that can make you the referrals, and then hope that they're going to be applying the same campaigns and the same practice type campaigns for you, and hope that you want them to not just do well on the front end, which most marketing companies do, but more importantly, continue that follow through that it takes to be able to continue optimizing, experimenting, try different things, do things outside the box, which actually brings the results. What I've seen, Neil, is that most marketing companies do the front end work, but because they have too many clients and don't have their own systems down, or time is limited, maybe just have one media buyer managing 30 different ad accounts, they don't give you the time of the day and the attention that it requires for you to be long-term sustainably successful over long-term. So what's the best alternative, Neil? Is what I think about it as like a done with you, where you understand what's going on. You have an idea. Okay. And that means you know how the system works. With paid ads, it just comes down to two things. It's the creatives, which is basically the ads, the images and videos that you have to create on the front end. And then the second part is the media buyer doing his part, which is basically creating campaigns, different ad sets, testing different audiences, different placements, all that stuff, all the backend stuff. You want to be involved. What I've seen is most successful people are involved in this process. That means they kind of understand what kind of creatives and ads and hooks and stuff is needed. They get involved with the graphic designer. Hey, I have some ideas for this. Can you create these? And then they hand it off to the media buyer who knows what they're doing. Or sometimes I found a lot of lawyers can actually learn on the backend stuff too. It's not as magic as it was before. These days, if you have a good people that could show you how this works, it's something that you can actually manage yourself with. Also people that could come and kind of find the mistakes that you're making and call them out for you. This is like when you're involved in part of the process and you kind of look at, you know, entering a relationship with another media buyer as a partnership, that's what thrives and that does well. You know, I don't have a marketing company that I just hire. I pay them $2,000 or $3,000 a month and just expect things from them. No, I'm involved in the creative process. I'm involved with coming up with cool ideas. Let's try this thing outside the box. Let's do that. And we're like in constant dialogue to make that happen. And those people usually are contractors, and contractors, these are kind of like smaller marketing companies versus these bigger agencies. And these marketing companies are very defaulty, $2,000 a month, $3,000 a month, kind of typical marketing companies that just try to take things off your hands.
Yeah, I think it comes down to ownership of the process. You know, if you don't want to get bogged down in the minor details of implementing the system, I think that's what you want a marketing company to do for you. But you have to take ownership of it from the top down in terms of having, as you said, some input into the creative process, and then understanding, at least at the top level, the placement process and details. Because I can't tell you how many times, you know, I've come across attorneys who say, well, I hired a marketing company, shot a couple of videos, and then I went off to do my legal work or to do whatever. And I left them to market my firm. And 6 months later, I'm not getting the right clients. I'm getting all kinds of wrong potential clients. And I find out that the placement wasn't correct and the creatives were slightly off. The audience wasn't right. And if you don't have a little bit of ownership of that, do along with you, as you suggest, you run that risk. And then the second part of that is that so many of these companies are cookie cutter companies. They do one thing one way and say, well, it worked for this industry or it worked for this client. It's going to work for you. That's just, to me, you want to find somebody who you can relate with on a personal level and can relate with your law practice on a practical level. So you have to take, to me, it's a bit of ownership of the process.
Because no one cares nearly as much as you, right, Neil? Yeah. That's the fact of life. really nobody does. We're not even close. So just have to assume, you know, that it's up to you pretty much if it's going to happen. And Neil, marketing is nuanced. And what I mean by that, you know your prospects. You know, you understand their pain points. You're the one that has these conversations with your prospects. Your marketing company doesn't. Maybe they know the surface level stuff, or maybe this, they know the stuff that's ChatGPT'd, but they don't know those little specific words or those new things that are coming in that you, when you are involved, you're able to put that back into the process. And then the kind of mindset of like just completely always constantly thinking outside the box. That's a, another thing that I always try to stress towards. You got to, because if you're thinking inside the box, you are the box, and you're not going to be anything but the box. But if you want to, you know, thrive and grow, then you need to think outside the box, because that's where you're going to, you know, you're going to take it to the next level. So yeah, don't rely too much on marketing companies. Take a proactive approach and kind of get involved in the process.
Yeah.
Point number three, Neil, you want to share this one?
Yeah, let's try that. Not qualifying your leads effectively. And I think what we see a lot of times is that folk view, I want a big a funnel at the top as I possibly can, just taking in everybody that I can at the top, and I'll weed them out as I sort them through the process. And that's a strain on your system, and B, not really very effective. You want to make sure that you're qualifying the leads before they enter the process, that they're the right kind of leads to go through the, you know, shakeout to determine whether or not they're a right fit for your firm. Otherwise, you end up wasting just an enormous amount of time and resources on unqualified leads. And I'll give you a specific example of something that I was confronted with in our digital marketing. You know, I'm an estate planning attorney. I do a couple of little things in the family law arena. I like doing adoptions, okay? Adoptions, everybody's happy at the end of an adoption. You know, they love their lawyer because they've helped create this family, and it's a fun thing to do. But what I found is that I was getting a lot of unqualified leads, people looking for more germane family law needs, such as divorce and custody and child support. And I was spending time with my receptionist having to screen those out. And then the ones that got through that, then my intake specialist was having to screen them out. And if they got through them, then I was having to screen them out. And there's three resources that were dedicated toward that ended up spending time on qualified leads. Not that they weren't good leads, they were just not good leads for me. And I think that's what we're talking about here, is not spending enough time qualifying those leads effectively.
And 80% of your leads are going to come in, just assume they're not qualified at all.
Yeah.
Right? Spam, kind of not qualified, can't afford it, all these reasons, they'll never become a client. So you got to filter through. And I didn't realize, Neil, early on in my career, how important this qualification. I remember I would hear qualified leads, qualification. I'm like, okay, maybe it's just a sales term. But over time, I'm like, this is actually a very crucial part. And sometimes, Neil, I see campaigns that they do the front end correctly, they do the creatives and the ads and stuff correctly, but they don't qualify correctly. And they lose a lot of conversion there. That means if they're not asking the right questions and they're not asking it correctly, which I'll try to give some hints. Let me just share the hints. You know, you want to qualify using simple multiple choice questions. Okay. So don't ask open-ended questions. Try to avoid open-ended. Multiple choice questions, starting off with the problem. That's the easiest question to ask. That's the most general. Second is save your contact information, private information to be asked later at the end of the form. Don't ask that upfront. Third is try to limit the number of options you provide, max 5, but ideally 3 or 4 will be ideal. Fourth is, if statute of limitations is an issue for you, then ask that very specifically. Has this occurred in the last 2 years? Yes or no? Fifth is put the most common response first. So if it's a multiple choice, you know, just say what type of accident were you involved in? Put the first option as car. Then maybe put Uber and Lyft, then motorcycle, and then put other. These are all like little levers that it may sound like kind of childish, but actually, Neil, every single one of those things that I just shared boosts your conversion rate little by little. And even if it boosts your conversion rate by 20%, which is actually way more than that, but let's just say 20%, that means you're getting 20% more qualified leads through the door, which means 20% more clients on the back end. So 20% more revenue just by just like that. It's pretty cool. I love that math part, Neil. It's like little small sum things you do on the front end actually affects your same percentage on the back end. It's a cool little math thing. And then one resource that I'll share, if you go to Lawyer Club, join lawyerclub.com, shout out to our Lawyer Club members for free. I created a GPT called Law Firm Qualified Leads by My Legal Academy, which it's a GPT, it's a custom GPT. Once you get it, it basically asks you only two questions. It asks you, what type of law do you practice and in what state? And it gives you two versions of qualification questions. One is a simple qualification questions. I'm actually looking at it right now, which is basically like the simplest version of a qualification questions usually ask on your marketing, whether that be on your landing pages, your Facebook lead forms, or your Calendly questions. And then there's also a comprehensive qualification questions, which you could give to your intakers to do a more thorough kind of qualification process. Or if you sign up the clients, then maybe you want to kind of qualify them further or do more analysis of like, what about client are they and what do they need? Then you can use that, those sets of questions to further kind of qualify them. That's a free resource. It's already been optimized and anybody can use them to figure out what their qualification questions should be.
Yeah, I think it's really important that we kind of drill down a little bit on where do you present these qualifying questions. I mean, you said you can present them in your landing page. Right. So they click on the ad, it goes to the landing page, there's the questions, or it can be on your Calendly form when people are making appointments that they have to answer a certain number of questions. And third, it can be your intake specialist. I think you do all three, and each one is a greater level of detail or more specificity. So you get the landing page screens out a few, the Calendly form screens out some more, and then the intake specialist screens out even more based on those answers.
Correct. And you can also use the answers that your prospects give you to automatically disqualify people. So let's just say something smart that we did for employment law. We realized that a good percentage of the prospects were coming in for employment law just had issues with their boss. So we added a smart option in there for the first question. I said, like, what's the work issue that you're experiencing? One of the options was, my boss doesn't like me. So if somebody chose that as like fifth option that was on the list, if they went through, wrongful termination, discrimination, et cetera, and then they chose, my boss doesn't like me.
Yeah.
Well, we can assume that if those
are personality issue.
Right. So, they overrode those options and they chose that one. Most likely some of those, I think we actually on the back end, I saw like about 5% of those people that chose that ended up being client, but 95% of that is not qualified. So it's pretty cool. I'm able to kind of throw through people. Neil, I want to hear about your interesting way that you use AI.
Oh, yeah. So as a result of spending time here every week with you, Sam, I've been taking a deeper dive into some of the AI tools that are available, ChatGPT being one of them, but also on Zoom. Zoom has a really wonderful AI companion. And if you initiate a Zoom call, you can go to AI companion, select start summary. And so now Zoom's listening to the call. When you're done with the Zoom call, you'll get an immediate pretty much summary of that call sent to you via email and also shows up in the Zoom application. So that summary is, well, first off, it has an overview and then it has details of what the summary is based on. I've been absolutely stunned at how accurate and how fast it is. It's been an absolute game changer. What it's allowed me to do, one of the things it's allowed me to do, was to feel more confident turning over the intake process, that initial consultation, to a VA. As attorneys, we're always hesitant to that because I think it's the one thing that we can hold on to. It's in hero mode, and it gives the potential client visibility into who in the firm is going to be working with them. But this way, I'm not losing anything because I see immediately what was discussed in that call. So then I said, well, what's the next thing I can do with this? So if I were Sam, I'd try to figure out a way to use ChatGPT to further refine that process. And so what I did was I built a framework in ChatGPT that said, for state administration clients, here are the key factors that we would like those clients to have that make them grade A clients, okay? And I assigned a numerical score or ranking, which was more important than the others. And then what we do is take that summary, consultation summary, run it through the ChatGPT and say, based on that framework, how would you rate this potential client? And that gives us insight as to the great whom should we have follow up if there's a follow up needed. And if we're pricing that, we have flexibility in the pricing model for that estate administration client, we can look at the results of the ChatGPT analysis to give us better confidence as to, you know, where we want to discount or not discount the fee. So it's showing to be some pretty useful tools, and we're looking for more ways to optimize or automate that process so that there's less humans involved and more data generated.
That's pretty epic. Neil, as you were speaking, something very insightful came to me that we'll use for the next very next episode. But
all right,
very
cool.
All right, let's go to point number four, and you may have just mentioned it, is failing to use dedicated virtual intakers. Neil, I'll let you take this one.
Yeah, this is a really sore spot for a lot of attorneys. It's hard for us to give up control. And what the pushback I hear from most people is they say, well, my practice isn't one that I can turn the intake process over to somebody else. You know, this is not like I have a call bank where people call in. I have 50 people screening, you know, 1,000 calls an hour out. No, I'm getting two or three calls a day and maybe just one consultation set up a day. And I have to do that consultation because it's my firm and that's the way I determine, you know, who I want to work with. And while that's true on the very beginning of a solo practice, for instance, if you aspire to any type of scalability, that's not doable in the long run. If you start to expand, you're going to spend all your time doing intake calls yourself. So you've got to turn it over to somebody. And that, to me, after you get the receptionist hired, the virtual receptionist hired, I think the very next thing is the dedicated virtual intake specialist. That's where you get the biggest bang for your buck. And you have to be able to tie it in with all the other systems that you have. It can't be standalone. It has to be integrated into your CRM. It has to be integrated into your task flow, to your calendaring program. But it is completely doable. And the more robust your CRM is, the more robust your calendaring program is, I think better the intake process will be. It's more trackable as well.
And it's just not sustainable, right, Neil? You could be good at it and you could be amazing at it. And maybe you could actually, most people, I don't know. I've seen some people who enjoy it. Sure. But how long could you enjoy it for? How long, you know, could you do it? So even if you're amazing at it, you still can't be the only one doing it for the rest of your life. So when? So if that's the case, you know, just better to, you know, bite the bullet.
Well, think about it in terms of what we said earlier. If we said earlier that you want to scale your marketing to bring in more clients so you can grow your law firm, well, you don't want to do that and then have your intake process be the bottleneck, disqualifies you as a potential solution to the client's problem. If they can't get through the intake process in a systemic and efficient way, you're going to lose the clients there that you've worked so hard to gain, you know, through your marketing. You're right. It's not sustainable.
It's not sustainable. And lawyers are not meant to do it because sales and intake requires follow, because most of the signups are made through the follow-up. I would say 80% of it is through follow-ups, right?
And Sam, don't you get the sense that a lot of attorneys, they have a mindset that says an intake specialist is a salesy, sleazy salesperson type position. And I don't want my firm to be known for that, when in point of fact, it's 100% the opposite, right?
It's a client advocate. Somebody
exactly.
Yeah, client advocate, somebody who just knows how to qualify. Whether the person is just their entire job is like, can we help you? And I'm going to tell you, you know, tell me about yourself. And I'm going to, you know, through good questions, you're going to convince yourself that you need us. Right. So when are you, you know, are you ready to take the next step?
Yeah, an intake specialist is not there to try and convince you to buy something you don't need. They're there to determine whether or not it's something we actually can help you with.
Yeah. The other thing is I've seen is people think that they're good at it, but they're not nearly as good as somebody who's dedicated to it and who also works to improve their skills when it comes to this regard and also improve the techniques that it requires to get better at this. Well, you're too busy doing other things. You're thinking about your clients. You're thinking about other stuff, your family, all this stuff, versus somebody who's just dedicated just to this. They're able to focus and dedicate more thought into improving their techniques and skills and thoughts and focus on all that stuff that it requires to be able to do this sustainably, successfully over a long duration of time. So what I've seen is dedicated takers are actually much better than you think you know your prospects. I promise you, if I take one of my amazing intakers, Neil, and I drop them off into any law firm, any of our listeners, within 30 days, they'll beat you and, you know, at the signups. Yeah. Let's go to point number 5, which is not speaking in your client's problem language. Neil, this still goes down as one of the top marketing mistakes that I still see to this day. Let me just be very explicit. In your marketing, don't talk too much about yourself. 80%. This 80% is very common. I guess marketing and 80 and per principle go hand in hand. Maybe 80% should be about your clients and their problems, and then 20% about you and how you can help. Okay, or yeah, about you and your, you know, your accolades and all that stuff. If you have that kind of equation in your head, 80% to lead with your clients' problems. I call it problem. Not solution. It's like, I think of it as like problem result, which is like a light at the end of the tunnel. It's like the ultimate thing that they receive. Not necessarily like, let's just say in immigration, it's not about receiving the green card. Okay. That's like kind of the vehicle, not the vehicle. It's about what their life looks like as a result of getting the green card is what really matters. And then that along with social proof, which is basically just proof of how many number of clients or stories or names of clients that you actually helped, specific stories, that kind of language, problem, result, social proof, and a call to action is the recipe for marketing in 2024 and beyond. You got to lean into that. These are kind of fundamental marketing. You know, you could be running the best campaigns, but if you don't have that part down, you're not speaking that language, or maybe you're just throwing up pictures of yourself and talking about how everybody needs, you know, to hire you, that might be the big kind of defining factor for you to have a successful campaign.
I remember one of my marketing gurus who was trying to impress me kept telling me about, you have to talk about the client's pain point because their pain points are drive them more towards action than anything else. And in doing so, you have to show how you can solve their problem that eliminates the pain. And I never really accepted that. I always thought that was looking at it a little differently. I've always felt the same way as you, Sam, is that what we really want to focus on is what their life would be like after the problem is solved. I mean, they're hiring an attorney. They expect their problem to be solved. They expect you to provide the solution, the technical solution. What you need to tap into is how much better they're going to feel or how much better their life is going to be once this process is complete. You mentioned about immigration. You know, I do it all the time with estate planning. It's not so much getting the documents written and signed. Hell, anybody could do that, frankly. It's about how people feel when they know they've taken care of something that's been on their to-do list for a long time, and they know as a result, they've made it easier for their family down the road. And it gives them peace of mind. And that's what they tap into. If they feel that you can give that to them, bring that sense of pleasure to them through whatever you do, then you have a winning solution.
And I'll add a relevant piece to this, which is authenticity. It's that extra little flavor, authenticity, that really gets the higher conversion rates. Neil, you always share about how on your website, You have a nice picture of you, you know, that they could see what kind of person you are, that you're real, that you're authentic. That
well,
is,
let's be honest. They most gravitate towards the picture of my wife and the dog.
But that's genius. That's genius. And that's what it takes. The authentic, real, as you said, care about your clients and how you can help them.
Give you a little personal aside. I posted this week that one of the downsides of what I do is sometimes we lose a client, you know, and I lost a client this week, a young woman who passed and left behind 3 children under the age of 12. And as painful as that was, the husband called me this week, personally called me to let me know that his wife had passed 9 days after we did her estate plan. And look, what we did didn't amount to a whole hell of a lot technically, because they were married, you know, but he said the peace of mind that it gave her, the sense of completeness and conclusion to what she was going through was enormously beneficial to them. And so I don't bring that up as a, you know, trying to pat myself on the back. I bring it up as to that's what clients tap into, how what you do can make them feel and make their lives better in the long run. Not focusing on their pain, not focusing on the problems that they're going through, but focusing on the value of the solutions that you have to offer.
That's amazing, Neil. All right. So amazing episode, a more amazing one lined up for you next. By the way, if you're not following us on YouTube, just search for My Legal Academy or The Law Entrepreneur. You'll find us on YouTube. We have an amazing episode lined up for you. Let me just give you a little teaser. Why are these 5 skills the hidden keys to legal success? Okay. Five skills that are kind of like the hidden skills that you need to be able to thrive and do well this year and the upcoming years. Thank you so much, Neil. And we'll see you soon.
My pleasure, Sam, as always.
Talk to you.
Thanks for listening to The Law Entrepreneur. If you found value in the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. And don't forget to share the episode with a friend. It could help transform their life. To get access to a treasure trove of exclusive free resources for lawyers, go to joinlawyerclub.com. Again, that's joinlawyerclub.com. We'll see you on the next episode.